24-24 right now. She's obliterating the record.
Alicia Barnall is about to four-peat the only man in history to do it.
Kara Gotcher, she wanted to do this event. It was important to her. Here in Duluth, how sweet it is. Her arm raised in triumph.
Welcome, everybody, to this Gearing Up for Grandma's podcast, brought to you by Essentia Health. Hello, everybody. I'm your host, Peter Graves. We've got a great show coming up today. We're joined in this episode by Chris Lundstrom. He's the head coach of the Minnesota Distance Elite Program, formerly known as Team USA Minnesota. He is also a professor of kinesiology at the University of Minnesota. He, of course, works with the incomparable Dakota Lindworm, who trains throughout the year. She's, of course, a two-time Grandma's Marathon champion, and in just a few short months, will be representing the United States at the 2024 Paris Summer Olympic Games after her third-place finish in the Olympic trials in February. Chris, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Grandma's Marathon was my first marathon, so it has a special place in my heart, and I'm always happy to connect with you all.
Well, we're going to talk, of course, about Dakota and many things, but give me a quick overview of your own running background.
Yeah, so I was, like many people, got into running in high school and did it for many years there. And I was able to go on and compete in college at Stanford University, where I was a very mediocre Division I runner. but I finished college and started running some road races and was able to get to a level where, you know, I was competing pretty well nationally and joined up with an upstart program in Minnesota called Team USA Minnesota, which you mentioned already is the previous name of our group. This was a group that was started 2001 at a time when, you know, U.S. distance running was kind of at an all-time low, and many people saw this and identified that there weren't training groups like there had been back, you know, in the 70s and 80s. And there was an effort to kind of revive that group training approach. And so I was able to come and join up in 2001. And, you know, right out of the gates, we had Kerry Tollefson was one of our initial team members as well. And Kerry, you know, went on to make the Olympic team in 2004. One of the other groups that formed about that time up in Mammoth Lakes, Team USA Mammoth Lakes at that time, now the Mammoth Track Club, produced two Olympic medalists in 2004 in Dina Castor and Meb Keflezighi. So pretty quickly, you know, it was apparent that this group training thing was effective, and a lot more groups sprung up and have continued to spring up to really change the landscape of American distance running.
So you were part of the inaugural team, and now you've been head coach since 2016. Tell us a little bit more about the team and how you've seen it grow over the past two plus decades. Certainly, Minnesota, a state with enormous running interest, and a state where we've developed some great athletes. So tell me how you've seen the program grow.
Yeah, it's a lot has maintained a kind of consistent approach in that we have men and women from really middle distance up to the marathon. That's sort of our foundation. But we've definitely gone through some ebbs and flows. I think the team really kind of took off. I mentioned Kerry and Katie McGregor was on the team also. Outstanding collegiate runner who ended up narrowly missing the Olympic team. And our guys at the time who joined the team, we were really feeling like we had to play catch up. So, but that did happen from like 2004 through, you know, the 2008 trials and 2012, many, many outstanding athletes. And then I think we got to the point where there was kind of a move towards some of the groups getting bigger shoe sponsorships, and it became really more competitive to get top athletes out of college. And so we had a bit of a lull kind of around, you know, leading into when I took over as coach in 2016. Our numbers had been down. We have traditionally been around, you know, 10 to 14 athletes, and we were down to six, I think, at that time. So from there, it's been a gradual rebuild and really trying to recapture what we had back in that 2008 to 2012 era, where we had people at multiple distances on the track, on the roads, cross country, competing at the highest level nationally. So we've been able to do that. We've added our numbers back up. We're now at 15 athletes and looking to continue to grow. And yeah, covering kind of all those distances and having a great synergy between our athletes from the middle distance up to the marathon, and a lot of young, talented and hungry athletes who are excited about the upcoming track season and stuff beyond that.
That's fantastic. I want to ask you a bit of a technical question. First of all, in a lot of sports that I cover, let's say cross-country skiing, for example, but whitewater kayaking and other kind of niche sports, I have seen these kind of, I always call them guerrilla groups that, you know, are relatively small, but there's so much benefit in training together. So I wanted to ask you about that. And secondly, since you've been head coach in 2016, training and the evolution of training, particularly for endurance sports, it's always, it's fluid. You know, I mean, some years there's more emphasis on speed, other years seemingly emphasis on distance. One of the things that I have followed is with people who work with heart rate monitors professionally is that I hear more talk about active rest now than I ever heard before, because I have the feeling, and I know this is a long question, I'm sorry, for a lot of times we were kind of overtrained in this country, thinking that if a little is good, a lot is better. What say you on those myriad of subjects?
Yeah, I think it is easy to like hear about a new type of workout or a new approach to training. And coaches, and I think humans in general, have a tendency to want to add, and let's do this and this. And I think there's a lot of value in the subtraction process as well. So as you said, you know, for me personally, I see a lot of athletes who just get burnt out and overtrained with particularly oftentimes excessive interval workouts that are really, really hard. I feel like it's okay to go to the well and practice once in a while, but not very often. I think, you know, using, you mentioned heart rate, I think using that as kind of a limiter or a guide to not go beyond this level of intensity for particular workouts where the goal really is, you know, gradual aerobic adaptation has a lot of benefit. And I think, you know, you're hearing a lot about that with like the double threshold training that's all the rage now. I'm not a big proponent of that, but I think, you know, high volume of threshold training where you are being careful not to overdo it and put yourself in a hole. But as much as the new trends come and go, the same things we know have always worked continue to work, which is, you know, it's an aerobic sport. So good quality aerobic work sprinkled in with the specifics for the event. So speed work that kind of matches what pace you need to run in your event. And a good mix, I would say. People are being smarter about doing strength and conditioning work to stay healthy and really work their musculoskeletal system to be prepared for the demands of the sport. So yeah, there's lots more sharing of information than there used to be, I think. And I think that's reflected in the faster and faster times that we're seeing across the board.
Yeah. Of course, not everybody is built physiologically like a Doug Curtis, for example, our own Doug Curtis, and the amount of marathons he can do. But I mean, some of it is biologic, some of it's got to be psychological. But and he's avoided injuries in his career too. But you know, when you think about the marathon, how many really high quality marathons do you think in general some people can do a year?
Yeah, I think there are differences between people in terms of recovery for sure, and the type of marathon that it is. For example, you know, a really hilly marathon is going to beat you up a little bit more than a flat one. I mean, I think definitely two is doable for most people. But even then, there are some people who really take a long time to recover from one. So one per year might be better. Somebody like Dakota seems to be fine with, you know, three per year most of the time. She recovers pretty quickly. Her grandma's marathon wins have come on the heels of a Boston Marathon experience both times. So that's a pretty quick turnaround. Now, after she finishes grandma's, it's very important that we take a good break and recovery time there. You know, you got to kind of pay attention to how you recover and respond, and make sure you are building in sometimes for a little longer recovery time, and also an emphasis on something different. So I think making sure that you're spending some time revitalizing your speed and things like that after a marathon is going to help make sure that you're not slowly degrading that quality over time.
Okay, you're listening to Gearing Up for Grandma's podcast. Our guest today, Chris Lundstrom, he's the head coach of the Minnesota Distance Elite program. So the team's goal is obviously to help develop athletes like Dakota, who reached the pinnacle of the sport at the Olympic Games. But you deal a lot with up-and-coming runners as well. Dakota actually fits this mold as well. You're getting them on the team early in their careers and being part of the growing process, so that continuity is so important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, distance runners for the most part don't reach their peak until, you know, late 20s, early 30s, even sometimes mid 30s or beyond. We're seeing more and more athletes continue to improve into their late 30s, even 40s. I think having that continuous progress and consistency of good quality work really sets people up for a healthy and long and hopefully, you know, lots of progress and achievements through the years.
And since you work with young developing athletes up to Olympic level elite athletes, what over the years has been your favorite part of coaching?
Yeah, I think the best part is just the relationships and, you know, seeing the growth and development of individuals, both as athletes and as people. You know, that's really, I feel like it's a special place to be allowed in to help assist them as they're progressing towards their goals and making their way through the world. So obviously my main focus is on their running, but as I always say, there's no separating the rest of life from running. It all interplays and influences. So, you know, you want athletes who are healthy, happy, and fulfilled. Trying to work with them through the various challenges of life and challenges of running, it's really rewarding to be allowed into their worlds.
I've covered cross-country skiing so much, and particularly in Norway, which has had a great endurance sport record in cross-country skiing, probably the best overall in the world. Do you feel when you start working with young athletes like Norway does, for example, it's I don't want to use the word informal, but they don't start racing immediately. They start in kind of sport play, in building strength and muscle memory and building that all important base. How do you view that?
Yeah, I mean, I do help out with a high school team, Minneapolis Washburn, and it, certainly it's a, you know, there's a emphasis on competition, but we definitely try to focus on learning the skills of the sport. So, you know, learning how to pace yourself, learning how to, how do you approach a race that's on a hilly course versus a flat course, an 800 versus a 2 mile, and learning how to do workouts. I mean, honestly, just learning to run a steady pace or find a pace that's sustainable for an easy run is a great challenge for the beginning athlete, whether they're an adult or a youth. And so finding that zone and then spending time in it and gradually building up. And then, yeah, like you said, building that musculoskeletal system, the things you're doing before and after your run to help, you know, strengthen the core, strengthen the hips, all of that stuff that is so critical to performance and long-term health.
And now, I mean, as a former racer and a pretty good one, Stanford has had great teams for years. Was it difficult for you to give up your personal running endeavors and make the switch to coaching, where your words and your example and milieu, the way you view training, was it tough to give up running to go into coaching?
Yeah, I think of them as two separate things. It was very hard for me to give up competitive running. But it was not, I was already pretty immersed in coaching at that time. And the coaching has always been very rewarding and enjoyable. But yeah, kind of the tail end of a competitive career is challenging to kind of decide, you know, what do I want to do with this when you're kind of no longer in a position where you're at your peak anymore. And so, but yeah, it was kind of a gradual transition there. You know, had kids, different priorities, slowly other things kind of take your focus. But with getting into coaching, you know, even back as far as right out of college, I started helping out with a high school team. And so, I really knew that that was something I wanted to pursue and just loved. And so I guess what I had to kind of frame it as is to shift my energies a little bit. And so that was actually coaching helped definitely make the moving out of competitive running a lot easier for me.
So from the time you were a runner to now, you ended up twice in this hallowed group, first team USA Minnesota, and now Minnesota Distance Elite. It strikes me, particularly endurance sports, where you're out there a long period of time, things are never particularly linear. There are ups and downs. Did you learn some lessons through your own running about that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that's the thing that often you know strikes me is when an athlete is you know struggling with something. It's often something that I went through myself and have personal experience with. You know, whether it's like kind of having that urge to kind of do more, overdo it a little bit in training. I can relate to that very much. Or struggling with, you know, the aftermath of a race that didn't go well. You know, to have kind of gone through a lot of that myself, it is certainly valuable experience. And you know, it does, I think, I hope anyway that it gives me a lot of empathy with what they're experiencing. And also, you know, there's not a workout that I'm giving them that I haven't tried myself in some form. And kind of know what it's going to feel like, and hopefully can prepare them well. I can't do them at the paces that some of these runners are doing them. They're better than me, but it's I kind of know what they're going to experience to some degree.
Oh, good, Chris. Okay, well, we do want to talk about Dakota. She's taken USA running by storm the past few months and really has become kind of a marathon darling, at least in the upper Midwest. We're so familiar with her because of her success in Duluth at Grandma's. But what do you see when you look today at the runner Dakota has become?
Yeah, it is funny kind of to hear, you know, so many people nationally in particular to be shocked and where did this woman come from? You know, and of course, in Duluth, you've seen her for several years. You know, I see her all the time. And so to see that it's really been a gradual process of becoming the athlete she is. And so I guess when I look at her today, I see somebody who has, you know, gone through a lot, learned a lot, somebody who's always been open to change, asking great questions, trying to grow. She's always identified what are sort of her weaknesses or areas for growth. And she's been somebody who's gone after those and attacked them and tried to improve upon them. And she's somebody who just is blessed with the quality that she's not limited by these kind of self-limiting beliefs that many athletes struggle with. So she's a dreamer and she's obviously somebody who's willing to do the work to make those dreams come to fruition.
So as you assess her, how does that compare to when she first joined the team? She was a Division II runner. She said herself, it seemed the odds were always stacked against her. But from meeting her a few times, I mean, she is tough and she has grit and she is completely inspiring. What have you seen of the progress of her since you've been working with her?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest, the most striking thing is probably just the change in her level of confidence. I think she came in without, you know, and she hadn't run some of the times that other athletes on the team had run and so forth. And so she had a lot of desire and grit and determination, as you said, but she didn't have a ton of confidence. And so that has been something that I have seen her build and build upon. And, you know, she's earned that confidence through the work that she's done. Obviously, it's no good to be overconfident and not have the skills to back it up. But she's, as I said, kind of addressed all the areas that were challenges for her, improving her speed, just getting more and more comfortable with the distances and the paces she needed to maintain. And so, yeah, she's just a much more confident individual than she was, even 3 years ago, but certainly when she joined us.
And she won her first Grandma's in 2021, followed up the next year in 2022. At what point did you guys start to think that an Olympic berth was a realistic thing for Dakota?
Yeah, I can't speak for her. I think she had an innate belief that it was a possibility. I guess where I really, had an eye-opening moment was after that 2021 Grandma's, kind of not a huge profile race, but the U.S. Half Marathon Championships were that December in South Carolina. And she was, I think, third. She was kicking in with Natasha Rogers, ran 109 for the half marathon. And on top of that, what she did that day that was different was she really executed a race plan. Like, I think historically she had been somebody who just kind of like goes for it and see what happens. And she was ran a really smart race and was just self-possessed. And she was fighting into the finish with Natasha Rogers, who, you know, we knew she's a top-notch runner at 10K. So for me, that was kind of an aha moment. And I think it was right after that that she signed with Puma also. So I wasn't the only one who saw something there for sure. And then, of course, the 2022 Grandma's where she just went gangbusters and ran that 2:25 low time. That sort of supported the idea that, hey, this is a realistic goal to have in mind.
So she made this progress to the national scene. It seems from the outside looking in that she made so much progress so quickly. And it seems like in 4 or 5 years, she's gone from relatively unknown runner to now one of the most popular, most well-known runners in the country. You mentioned confidence, Chris. Was that part of the equation, a growing confidence?
I think for sure that's been a big part of it. Just being willing to get in there and mix it up. And I think having Annie Frisbee to train with, that has only helped because, you know, Annie is consistently top three, top five in U.S. championships. And, I think when you're working out with somebody and you see them like racing with these people, you feel like, hey, I belong right there too. And so that has fed both ways, I think, with them. I would say, a lot of people just have some progress and then some dips back. And she's had a few of those, but she's really stepped through them really well. I mean, if we kind of look back to 2020, obviously wasn't a lot of racing, but she wasn't kind of just sitting around. We continued to train and had very few limited opportunities, but the marathon project came up in December of 2020. And that's where she ran. She was aiming for sub 230, and I think she ran 230 and some change. But that again was another sign that she's stepping up. And I remember, with all the restrictions and testing and everything that we had to go through to even run that race, I remember at one point she just said, I need this, I need this race. And that to me, that type of hunger was just showed like this is something that is deep down within her.
I've always been interested in, as well as the physiological aspect of sport, the psychological aspect, and to talk about a race that is fraught with many emotions. It's, of course, the Olympic trials. Asking kind of a personal question here, what were your emotions like throughout the day as Dakota fought to be in the top three and named to the Olympic team? Is it describable in words?
Yeah, it was, I would say, a real roller coaster of a day for sure. Having, been there a few times, I was fairly, for it being the Olympic trials, I would say I was fairly relaxed early on in the race. Annie and Dakota were right with the lead pack early on. And other than, there was a little spot in like mile two or three where they were gapped back. And I remember whoever was doing the commentary said, oh, the Olympic team is coming from this lead group. And, Dakota and Annie were like five steps back or something. And I got fed up and I turned off the coverage. I kind of protected myself in that way. But it was great to see them up there. I was obviously monitoring our other athletes, some of whom were not having as good a day, some who were. And so it was really kind of in that last loop where things started to get exciting and, the race broke apart a little bit. Dakota was back in about eighth place at one point. But still, running a fantastic race. And so I think I saw her at a point, I think it was like 22, 23 miles where she was, had moved now up into third position, but had Carolyn Rotich sitting right behind her. And when I saw her there was a little bit of like, oh no, sinking in my chest of like, oh, this woman is sitting right on her. Oh my gosh. That's when I texted, we were at a kind of a group text going between some of the people involved with the team, our board members and such. And that's when I texted, I said, I'm starting to get a little nervous. And that was an understatement, I would say. But then I got on my bike and zipped up a little further up the course. And you know, I just screamed at her that, you know, you've got this, you know, all the confidence, you're ready to go. And got up a little further up the course to, you know, a little over a mile to go. And by that point, Dakota had moved into third. And so I was losing my mind at that point because she had a good gap on fourth place, and was just so excited. And yeah, it was as much as you believe that it's going to happen, or you know, you don't necessarily expect it, but you envision it ahead of time. It's a different thing to be right there and to have it happening in real time in front of you. And of course, I still was not celebrating. I felt like got to see her cross, you know, get across the line first, before we celebrate. Even though, I mean, big picture, you know, we've got two women in the top 10. That's amazing, whatever place they end. But obviously to have the spot on the team is just phenomenal and tough to put into words for sure.
Oh, for sure. Did you go in with Dakota with some kind of tactical advice or strategy for that race?
Yeah. I mean, we talked the week of, and you know, she her plan, I always like to, you know, hear what the athlete thinks they ought to do and what their approach is. And she had a really, really sound plan, which was kind of to just stick with the lead group and try to be invisible, I think she said, just try to, you know, sit in there, sit in the back. Which she did get out in the front a little bit at one point. Yeah, you know, but for the most part, tucking in and staying relaxed. And, you know, I thought that was a great plan. The only thing I added was that, you know that there are going to be surges even from the start. Somebody might go out really fast who has, you know, no business going out, and or somebody might go out really fast who, you know, maybe they are going to keep that up, but they're going to bring some people with them that probably shouldn't go. And there are surges that happen also at various points in the race. And you don't need to follow every surge. Just keep a steady effort, and try to, you know, if there is a gap, try to just gradually close it back down. Especially with it being, you know, a warmer race, you know, people are going to suffer over the last 10K. So I think the one thing that I emphasized was that, you know, the place you're in at 20 miles does not matter. The place you're in at 26.2 miles matters. So don't worry about it. If you're in eighth place at 20 miles, that's fine. Just keep working up, because a lot happens in the last 10K.
Yeah, for sure. Do you recall seeing her the first time after the race? What emotions, what discussion took place?
Yeah, I mean, so the first time I saw her after the race, I somehow managed to get through the back of the chute. So I was back behind the finish line and I saw her off in the distance, you know, with the flag and, you know, with the TV cameras and everything. And I was just so proud, you know, and excited for her. And definitely it was sinking in that, wow, things are going to change here. But then she came out of the chute and yeah, we just hugged and I think I said, "You did it." And I think, you know, she said, "Thank you, thank you." And I said, "No, thank you." Yeah. So it was just a bit of a blur, but it was definitely a ecstatic moment. And you know, just so many people congratulating us and excited for her. So yeah, it was something I'll definitely never forget.
Yeah, how lovely. Now, I'm not going to ask you to give away all your secrets, but more or less, what's the training been like for her since she made the team in preparation for Paris?
Yeah, it's interesting because it's you know, enough time where it's like immediately after the race, it wasn't like, oh, we need to start really specifically preparing. We have a good chunk of time. So we did what we typically do after a marathon, which is take some downtime and then build back up and put in some shorter, faster work, a little bit lower mileage than we would for marathon training for a few weeks here. And she's got this Boston 5K that she's running, you know, and then really we're kind of be starting to get into marathon training here shortly. So, so yeah, we've got obviously May, June, July for kind of that marathon specific preparation and into August, of course.
Now, I understand the two of you recently went to the City of Lights, Paris, to preview the course. What can you share a little bit about what Dakota and the others will be dealing with come August for the race course itself?
Well, the croissants are fantastic. Let me tell you that. First off, they're really good. But as far as the race goes, the course is pretty interesting. It's really about a 15K or, you know, 9, 10 miles, relatively flat in the center of Paris. And then it has a very hilly middle section of the race where the course goes out to Versailles, following the famous march to Versailles, a historic event. And so it's super hilly, like you're climbing for about 5K. And
I'm going to interrupt you right here because it's a fascinating point. Is this maybe one of the hilliest Olympic marathon courses that you may have been familiar with?
Yeah, for sure. I think I remember the 2004 Olympic marathon in Athens was very hilly also, and similarly was set up to kind of highlight some of these historic sites. So it's a big departure from the typical, you know, world championship or Olympic marathon where it's a multi-loop course on a flat, relatively flat route that's meant to be a little bit faster. This is not going to be a fast marathon. And particularly on the way back from Versailles, there's a really big steep hill and followed by a really steep downhill. And then you finish that and there's about 10K of running still to go. So that's pretty flat. So, but obviously when you come off that hill, you know, you still need to be in a position where you can run at a good pace because you still got 6 miles to go. So yeah, it's an interesting challenge. And I think we were both excited because of that uniqueness of the course. And it's a great opportunity for somebody who runs smart and prepares well.
That's a fascinating preview. I do want to mention Dakota wasn't the only Minnesota Distance Elite team member participating in the trials. You had several men's and women's runners out there in Orlando. What did it mean to you to see so many of your athletes on the stage like that?
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's great when we have a group that's kind of all focused on one event like that. We had seven athletes competing. And so, you know, having a training camp down in Orlando for the month of January is really great because, you know, oftentimes we have athletes competing over here and choosing different marathons. And so they're able to train together, but, you know, with slight differences and not all focused on that one event. So it's really, you know, I think for the athletes, you know, you're always going to remember those Olympic trials. And it's a really special thing to be a part of, regardless of the outcome of the event. So for them to kind of, you know, oftentimes you have a lot of their families going to the event and it's just, you know, got a little more visibility. I think a lot of times distance runners and endurance athletes in general, it's a lot of hard work in solitude or just with a small group of people. So having that spotlight shown on them is really great and nice to see.
Regarding the women in the international field, who also should we be looking for? The traditional running powerhouses will have strong teams, I suppose.
Yeah, I saw where the Kenyan Federation released, I think it was six athletes who are kind of in the pool that they'll select their three from. So certainly Kenya and Ethiopia are the powerhouses that are often hunting for those medals. But you know, the unique thing is compared to like a world marathon major, or even grandma's marathons, sometimes where you have, one of these powerhouse countries, they only get three in this case. And not everybody's going to have a great day for sure. So we will find out more for sure of who's actually competing in the months ahead. But ultimately, I think you just focus on running your own race and being smart with your preparation.
Yeah, it seems to me, looking back historically, that the marathon has often, particularly at the Olympic Games, has been unpredictable at times. There's something about the Olympics that is a little bit different in the way it's viewed, and sometimes there are surprises.
Yeah, I think there are often surprises for sure. It is certainly a pressure cooker in terms of the amount of spotlight that's on the event. And so yeah, just like the trials, it all comes down to how you are on that one day. And I think other factors, certainly, Summer Olympics almost always are hot, so that changes the dynamic and makes things less predictable as well. Compare that to like a Chicago marathon where, yeah, it's going to be likely cool and it's flat. You can really know what you're getting into. With the Olympic marathon, there's just a lot of unknowns, and certainly, the environment is different than anything you're going to experience anywhere else.
Yeah. Having commented on 13 Olympic Games in skiing and cycling, the one thing that's unknown too is you take an athlete who may not be globally known, but then all of a sudden you get to the games and the Today Show wants you on their set and all of these things that are really important to do. And bring visibility not only to the athlete, but to the sport itself. How will you have any control over her, like media appearances or schedule, Chris, or does that lie within the purview of the national team?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have conversations about that for sure, of finding a balance. I think, Dakota's somebody who enjoys talking with the media and is very grateful for the spotlight being shown her way and where she can help inspire others. But also there is a point where you do need to protect your ability to focus and train and prepare. And so there's a balance. She has a, you know, she's represented by Howie Management. Meb's brother Howie is a agent. So they help with that. And certainly with the US team, there may be certain demands. Yeah, it's something to kind of be aware of and kind of draw certain limits. Certainly also enjoy it while it's there. It's a great thing to have that attention.
Yeah, I think that's a really wonderful, measured piece of advice. I've enjoyed this so much. I feel quite confident we could talk about this for another hour easily. And you've been a great guest. Before I let you go, what's your biggest piece of advice for young runners and especially young women who may want to go out sometime and do what you're doing, working with elite athletes or trying to be an elite athlete. What advice would you give for young women runners?
Yeah, I think just being patient and consistent. Those are the two biggest things, whether it's as an athlete or as a coach. I spent many, many years coaching high school, coaching individuals, couch to 5K, beginning marathon training class at the university, and, you know, learning from all of those experiences. And same thing as an athlete, particularly for young women, there will be ups and downs in any athletic career, and just trying to be consistent over time, be smart, and continue to put in the work, and have that belief in yourself. For young women, don't let anybody tell you you can't do something, because you can. And it's just a matter of, finding the thing that really lights you up and gets you excited. I think that's the thing that you're going to be able to get up for day in and day out. And, you know, for Dakota, it's running, but it might be something else for another person. But identifying that thing that you really love and pursuing it, day in and day out, year after year, it's amazing where it can take you.
Thank you so much for sharing a little bit about your athletes and about dreams. You certainly have inspired me. And Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Yeah. So best of luck to you and Dakota in the buildup to these Olympic Games this summer. We'll all be watching and, of course, rooting for her. And we look forward to next year when perhaps she can return to try to reclaim the Grandma's Marathon crown as well. This Gearing Up for Grandma's podcast is brought to you by Essentia Health. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcast. And please subscribe, rate us, and tell your friends. Grandma's Marathon is proudly presented by Toyota, Members Cooperative Credit Union, ASICS, and Coca-Cola. This is Peter Graves. We'll talk running again soon. So long.